and the story of Absalom reads like a modern-day soap opera, complete with deception and lies and sex and trysts, and then from resentment to bitterness, and from bitterness to retaliation, replete with intrigue and finally murder.
Aloha, and welcome to As the World Turns. No, welcome to Words of New Hope with Dr. Wayne Cordero. Today, Pastor Wayne continues from a series entitled Indispensable Life Lessons with a lesson that is so important for each of us to learn, the importance of forgiveness and the consequences of unforgiveness. Here is Pastor Wayne with a message entitled Absalom, A Case of Unforgiveness.
How many of you are glad that God doesn't keep record of your iniquities and sins? Oh, I am so happy. I am very, very happy. Because none of us would last very long. Well, this morning we want to talk about one of David's sons. His name is Absalom. We want to talk about a case of unforgiveness. The story of Absalom extends to about four chapters in the book of 2 Samuel, and so we won't necessarily read through all of them, but let me story tell it for you so that you'll get the context and you can read it when you get home. David, King David, had several sons, one whose name was Absalom. The most known of his sons is Solomon. Solomon is the one that took over the throne. His mother was Bathsheba. He also had another son by the name of Amnon. Absalom was a great warrior. And because David had many wives, or call them concubines, when he would have children through the different ones, they would become half-brothers and half-sisters, same father, different mothers. And some of them would be quite distant from one another. Well, the story unfolds, and the story of Absalom reads like a modern-day soap opera. I mean, complete with deception and lies and sex and trysts, and then from resentment to bitterness, and from bitterness to retaliation, replete with intrigue and finally murder. Well, Absalom has a sister named Tamar, and she was a babe. I mean a babe. Well, way over here, Amnon, his half-brother, checks her out at a picnic or something and says, woo, and his heart starts to pitter-patter. So he through deception, seduces her into his tent and then rapes her. Tamar comes to Absalom, her real brother, and exposes what Amnon did. What should we do, Tamar says, what should we do? And Absalom is incensed at this horrible injustice. Absalom says, just hold on. Just wait. I'll take care of it. And what happens is unforgiveness, like a parasite, finds its host and starts sucking his blood until his life is being drained away, and on the inside, acid begins to drip. For 2 years, he holds this inside. And it begins to affect not only his relationships, but his very personality. And he begins to morph into something he doesn't want to become. And as you will see in just a moment, it ruins his whole future. This acid that drips of unforgiveness continues to drip for 2 years until it fries his insides. But one day, the opportunity to take revenge and retaliate came to pass. It was the time of the sheep shearing festival that the family was involved in. And so they would shear the sheep and sort of have a festival and a party, and Absalom invites Amnon, the one that raped his sister. Amnon, I want to invite you to our party. Well, Amnon, knowing that Absalom found out, figures, oh, it's been 2 years. It must have blown over. So, oh, this is good. What he didn't realize that there was a plot that had been laid insidiously in order to take his life. Amnon, like just a caught fox going to its trap, with the bait. He just goes. And Absalom says, Amnon, come over here. I want to show you something. And as Amnon is taken around the corner, Absalom pulls a knife and slides it into the heart of his brother Amnon until his life drains. Then Absalom wipes the blood off of his hand and returns. Well, this news reaches the ears of David, who is the king. And David can't believe that one of his sons kills his own brother, though he knew about Tamar and it was an injustice that needed to be dealt with. But this way of dealing with it is just too much that he could handle, more than the king could handle. Now, if you know anything about Old Testament law, it's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, which means if one kills another, the one who is the culprit dies. That's the penalty. So knowing this, David realizes that Absalom must die, but he can't do that. It's his son, so he says, Absalom, you must leave Jerusalem. You must leave the city. What do you mean, leave the city? He was wrong. Well, you need to forgive. Forgive? What do you mean, forgive? Don't you realize that there was an injustice? What do you mean, forgive? You just can't minimize what happened. I must have you leave Jerusalem. So Absalom is banished from Jerusalem by his father David, the king. He's driven out of the city, and for 3 years he's at large. And he says, I want to come back. David says, no, I want to come back. So he finally finds one of David's generals and says, have my father bring me back. So David is finally convinced and he says, all right, you can come back. But then for another 2 years, even though he's restored to Jerusalem, David does not see him, does not call for him. Absalom says to the general, hey, get my father to call me and embrace me in public so that it shows the public that I am accepted again by the king, my father. I want to be accepted in public as a display. And David says, no, the time is not now, because indeed Absalom should be dead. You murdered somebody with premeditated murder. It's like first degree murder today. And it's like someone with first degree murder getting 3 years in prison, then he's at large again. His father, David, was overly gracious. And then he says, I want him to embrace me in public to show that I'm restored. And he says, no, not yet. You're on probation, basically. And so he says to the general, you tell my father to embrace me publicly and make that a display of acceptance. The general says, I'll see what he can do, but I don't know. Well, another year passes by and still no audience with his father. So he says to the general, come on, you're supposed to get me an audience with my dad. Well, I don't know. So Absalom one day, the general's house is next to his, and the general has some fields of wheat. Absalom goes and starts a fire and burns up this guy's property. So the general comes rushing back saying, hey, what in the world are you doing? Absalom said, well, I wanted your attention, you wouldn't give it to me, so I burned your stuff down. And the general says, you idiot. See, that's what unforgiveness does. Not only does it come out in contentiousness and bitterness, it also comes out in poor decision-making and comes out in defensiveness. It comes out in so many different ways, like retaliation and sabotage, disrespect. It's funny. Unforgiveness gives birth to the most insidious character defaults or faults. It's amazing. So finally, his father embraces him in public and says, okay. But does that satisfy his unforgiveness on the inside? Not at all. He starts looking for other ways to get back at his father who banished him for 3 years from Jerusalem. And this treachery of unforgiveness starts to pop its head out in this way, and that is this. Absalom will be walking around town. And someone would come and say, hey, Absalom, aren't you the king's son? Yes, I am. Hey, did you know that I overpaid my taxes last year and I asked the IRS to give me some money back as a refund and they wouldn't do it? You're kidding, said Absalom. That's right. Oh, man, that is an injustice. Yes, I think so too. You know, Absalom says, you know, if I were king, I get it back to you.
Really?
Yeah, you bet. The next day, someone else comes, Absalom, Absalom, you know, my neighbor encroached on my boundary and built a wall in my property line. I talked to the government about it and they didn't do anything. They won't have him move his wall.
You're kidding. That's an injustice.
Yeah, that's right. And they won't do a thing.
Man, that is terrible, you know? You know, if I were king, I'd take
care of that.
You would?
Absolutely. And what happens is he begins to turn the hearts of the people away from the king, King David, and start to turn it to himself. It's funny, another thing about unforgiveness is the world revolves around you and how you feel and how you're offended and how you've been victimized, and everything revolves around you. Unforgiveness is a treacherous thing. Let me tell you why unforgiveness is so treacherous. Number one, would you write in your notes? Because unforgiveness blocks God's plan for your life. It blocks God's plan for your life. You see, Absalom could have been a great warrior and maybe the next general. But let me tell you how treacherous unforgiveness is. Some time ago, there was a leak in the roof and in the office, and there was a tile that was getting wet. So I said to Dan, there's a leak here, and take a look. And you know, you'd think you can just take out the tile, and directly above the tile would be the leak because of the drip there. And you just patch the leak and that would be the end of it. But no, not this leak. You see, this leak was not to be found anywhere in the area. And after locating this thing, after a lot of effort, we found that the leak started way on the other side of the building almost. And it leaked, but the water found a rafter and it followed this rafter. And then it found some wire that it followed the wire. And then finally, at a curve, it started to drip above my office. And it was the most difficult thing to find out why it was leaking and messing up the tile. It wasn't directly connected to that tile or above it. It was way over here, completely disconnected, yet it was affecting my office on the other side of the building almost. Unforgiveness is just like that. You see, unforgiveness, it shows up in the most unexpected places. And it's finding its source is often very difficult. Because you see, you can have something happen with your cousin and unforgiveness takes place there and you're angry. Later on, it shows up in a relationship with someone that reminds you of your cousin. You can have unforgiveness against your parents. And years later, halfway across the world, you get married and you have the same problems because of an unforgiveness. Let me give you an example of how that happened. There was a lady in the church I was with that was a part of leadership. And everything I suggested, she contended with and refused to accept. I mean, I'm thinking, now wait a minute, it's a pretty good idea. Nope. And everything I said, she had a contention with it, had a bone to pick. I'd say, the sky is blue. Nope, nope, nope. You don't understand God, Wayne. I said, what do you mean? I'd say, well, you know, I think we should, over the walkways, you know, put these, this roof kind of thing, this little walkway, so, because when people get off the parking lot's a long way to the sanctuary. Nope, she said, that's not using God's money wisely. It's going to cost a lot of money. She says, Wayne, umbrellas are a lot cheaper. Buy them an umbrella. And I said, what do you mean? So everything I did, there was a contention against it. I thought, what is wrong with me? You know, I was thinking, man, I started smelling myself. What is wrong? Looking under my shoe, you know. I couldn't figure out what was going on. Later on, she got married, and a few years later, her marriage blew up. I thought, man, this lady's having troubles. 9 years later, I get a letter. Dear Wayne, I need to ask for your forgiveness. And I thought, forgiveness for what? I didn't do anything, you know, but you're absolutely forgiven. But what she revealed to me was that years before, her uncle had molested her. And because of an unforgiveness when she was a teenage girl, unforgiveness with her uncle, she was angry then way over here, anything where a male was in authority, she had a contention with them because the leak started way over here, but it followed and the acid was dripping here. But the leak didn't originate right here. It's way down there somewhere. But we couldn't figure out where the leak was. We couldn't figure out what the source of this was. And then she got married over here, and that blew up because her husband was a male in authority. And she didn't like that. And so everything he said after a while, she contended with and contended until it blew that up. And then her relationship with her kids started going bad. And I thought, wow. And she said, so I just needed to ask you your forgiveness because I held some things against you. And I thought, moi? You have something against innocent moi? Couldn't believe that woman. But then I understood. You see, unforgiveness is like that. It's like that leak in the roof that starts way over there somewhere. And it's hard to locate the origin of it because it shows up in the most disconnected places. You can have a run-in with someone at your work, and because of unforgiveness, doesn't it affect your home life? You can have some contention with your boss and you bring it right into your family and the acid spills on them and they can't figure out what they're doing wrong. See, unforgiveness begins to affect everything about your life. Listen, how badly do you want God's best for your future? How much do you want God's best for your marriage or your family or your friendships? Then if your answer is, yes, I want God's best, then we must understand the treachery of unforgiveness and how it leaks acid until it stains every area of your life. And we've got to deal with that. Just this last Friday, we were talking about this very subject in our men's Bible study that we have men every Friday morning at 6:30 at the ministry center. One of the men said, you know, after about 10 years, he said, Wayne, I had to call my ex-wife and ask for her forgiveness. I said, 10 years? He said, yeah. I said, you remembered stuff for 10 years? He said, yeah. So I said, now, after 10 years, you must have been carrying quite a load in order to feel the weight of it enough to say, I've got to get rid of this and divest myself of this. I said, what, this unforgiveness, what does it feel like? Because you carried it for almost a decade. Did it affect you in the different relationships? He said, oh, yes. I said, what's it like? He said, you know, unforgiveness, he said, it's like a little vial of acid, a little cup of acid that's placed right behind your heart. And even though I move away from this situation, every time I move to another situation, it spills onto my heart and stains my heart for this. And then the resentment builds up again and it fills this glass up again and I'll go over here and be a part of this activity and it'll spill and burn my heart on this one too. And really, it doesn't have much to do with these situations. It has everything to do with unforgiveness yet tolerated on the inside. You see, that's what resentment is. Let me tell you what resentment is. Resentment comes from a Latin word that's hyphenated, re, which means again, and sento, resento, where we get resentment from. Sento means to feel the cut again, as it were, to feel the cut. So re means again, and to feel the pain. See, sento means to cut and to feel the pain of that. It's not the cutting, but the feeling of the cut. And so resentment is, again, remembering and bringing to remembrance what someone did and feeling the cut again. And the pain builds up and the acid drips into the cup that spills. That's just what unforgiveness does. And it leaks out into every area of your life and in mine. Paul the Apostle says it this way. Paul the Apostle was the proclaimer of the gospel in the New Testament. In fact, half of the New Testament, God used him through which he wrote the Bible, the New Testament. So in fact, Paul says it this way, woe is me if I don't proclaim the gospel. I mean, he was known as the proclaimer of the gospel. But it was in 2 Timothy. It was in 2 Timothy chapter 4 when a man named Alexander, the coppersmith, he says, Alexander the coppersmith did me much harm. We don't know what it is, he doesn't say. But we do know that there was a deep wound that was caused by Alexander, whether it was slander or betrayal, or we don't know. But he writes to Timothy and he says, be on guard against him for yourself, because he's a pretty vile man. Be careful. But knowing that forgiveness was a non-negotiable, an indispensable life lesson, he knew that if he didn't give forgiveness to this man, Alexander, it wouldn't affect Alexander, but it really would affect him. And so he writes, and let's read it together right there in your scriptures. Ready? 2 Timothy 4:16, under number one. Go. At my first defense, no one supported me, but all deserted me. May it not be counted against them. Would you underline that? May it not be counted against them. Paul is saying, nope, I've got to forgive them. It won't be counted against them. Why, Paul? Why? He's about to disclose that to us. Let's read on. But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me in order that through me the proclamation might be fully accomplished. Did you catch what he's saying? He's saying, I've got to proclaim the gospel. But if I hold this against Alexander the coppersmith, then God's plan is blocked in my life. I have got to give forgiveness so that I can continue to fulfill the calling that God has on my life to fully proclaim the gospel. You see, when I hold unforgiveness, it ruins me, my ministry, my relationships, my family, my future. You see, if you understand that you want God's best in your life, unforgiveness is not an option. You cannot tolerate that. Tolerating unforgiveness isn't an option. All of you have heard of Alex Pacheco, who pastors the church New Hope in Hilo. And for many years, he was a fisherman. And he tells me a story of one day when one of the big ahi hooks got caught in his foot, in his heel, dug in. See, I guess what was happening was he must have had rubber slippers on or something, standing on this hook. And when the winch pulled to pull all the hooks out, it hooked his heel. And it yanked it and set the hook. Now, if you've ever seen an ahi hook, it's about this big. It is a babucha, mama. Thing is huge. And it hurts when those things go in. I mean, I know I did that once. I was casting and the thing hooked on my head. The thing hurts bad. Now you might say, that's because you porgy. That's why that thing got hooked in your head. Well, Alex is porgy as well, and then he hooked himself in the heel. Well, it set in so bad that he cut the line, and he had to turn the boat towards land, get in as fast as he could. He radioed in the closest place of a clinic or whatever, it was the fire station, and there a paramedic met him to get that hook out. When he arrived there, the pain was so great and was starting to swell up his foot that they tried every way to get that hook out. So they tried to pull it out, but there's a barb in it. And so the barb kept ripping his insides out. And so they tried to stick something in and rip it open a little bit to get it out, and they couldn't. I mean, it was hooked in almost probably over halfway. So the only way they could get it out was to push it all the way through and then cut it. And then pull it back out. I said, did it hurt? I said, Alex, couldn't they have gotten it out any other way? They said, we tried every way we could, every way. But here's the thing, even though it hurt because they had to drive it all the way through and then cut it with a hacksaw or a big cutter, even though the pain was there, let me tell you, it didn't matter. It was not an option for them to leave it in. That wasn't an option. It had to come out. So it didn't matter how it got out. Even if it caused a little more pain, it had to come out. An option was not to leave it in there. That was just no-brainer. It had to come out. And that is the same way that we need to view unforgiveness. It has to get out.
You've just heard part one of a message entitled Absalom, A Case of Unforgiveness. We'll continue this intriguing account of the life of Absalom on tomorrow's program, but not just from the negative perspective of unforgiveness. Tomorrow, Pastor Wayne will show us the incredible benefits that come as a result of genuine forgiveness. We hope you'll join us. Thank you for listening, and until next time, God bless you and aloha.
What if there were a place where you could discover, develop, and fulfill your dreams? That place is New Hope Christian College.
New Hope Christian College is a place where your teachers really do care about you, they want you to succeed, and they're willing to partner with you to do whatever it takes to make that happen.
The education that I've received at New Hope has really equipped me to graduate market ready.
For more information, go online to newhope.edu or call 1-800-322-2638. New Hope Christian College, a place where dreams are released.